Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden. We're the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show. Truth straight up.
Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Cody LeBlanc joins us to talk about the lawfare attacks that COGOP Chair Britta Horn is continuing against the grassroots.
The pro se litigator.
Of the year.
Of the year.
But starting off with Robert Spencer, one of our favorite guests. Robert, every time we book you, everyone's like, yay, Robert Spencer.
Robert's
exactly. That you and Chuck and Julie, you guys can, you, whatever, put Robert on. But you've got a new book out, Intifada on the Hudson, the Selling of Zohran Mamdani. So thank you. Welcome to the show. I appreciate your time again.
Yeah, nice to see you folks again. And thanks.
Yeah.
And yes, Intifada on the Hudson, the Selling of Zohran Mamdani, tells the whole story of how this guy is a creation of the leftist establishment, how he has a very insidious agenda. He holds to two, not just one, but two radical anti-American ideologies as a Marxist, which he denies, but I've got the proof in the book, and as a Shiite, 12 or Shiite Muslim. That's the sect of the Muslims that runs the Islamic Republic of Iran, where they order the people every week on Friday in the mosque to chant death to America. And the Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran, has said, death to America is not just a slogan, it's our goal, it's our policy, it's the mission of the regime. So imagine the damage that a guy who believes that could do as mayor of New York City.
Hold up your book again.
Yeah.
Hold up your book.
This is it.
I hate to say it, but he looks like a little younger you.
Handsome fellow.
Very handsome guy.
Some charismatic guy. Well, let's kind of go through this because I know there's been a lot. He's still leading in the polls, by the way, and it looks like he very well will become the mayor of New York, which is, I say New York, you know, you get what you vote for there. But let's talk about, there's been a lot coming out about, like, as you said, the creation. They make it seem, as the left does, he just sort of sprang out of nowhere.
One day. Got off the couch in his luxurious apartment.
And people loved him. But I mean, there's been a concerted, I mean, well-funded, I've been reading things from like George Soros organizations. I mean, so talk a little bit about how he was created.
Well, he is Soros funded, but he's also a child of privilege who's been groomed for this for years. This is a guy who says he's working for the common people and wants to help the poor and so on, but he's certainly not one of them. He is the son of multimillionaires. His mother is Mira Nair, who is an award-winning filmmaker. She did a film some years ago that I saw, Mississippi Masala, with Denzel Washington. And so we're talking about that kind of A-list Hollywood star that she gets in her movies. And his father is Mahmoud Mamdani, who is a Marxist professor at Columbia University and internationally renowned, particularly for his book from 2005. I remember when this came out, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, which is all about how Islamic terrorism is really America's fault, and we have to give them money, and then it'll make it all okay.
All right, reparations. All right.
I'm kind of making fun of it, but that actually became the whole policy of the Western world and still is. If we just are nice enough to them and give them enough money, then they'll love us. It's never worked and never will work, but a lot of it comes from Mahmoud Mamdani. Anyway, Zohran, the next mayor of New York, most likely, he has always grown up. I mean, he's grown up consistently in the limelight as being the son of these two famous, noteworthy Marxists. And for example, he decided in 2017 to become a rapper. And he kind of failed at being a rapper. He didn't make any hit songs, but the New York Times wrote him up as a rapper. And got an A-list Bollywood star, star of the movies in India, to be in one of his rap videos because she was a friend of his mom. And so, in other words, this guy has always been among the leftist cultural elites, and now he's trying to be a leader among the leftist political elites.
Well, how does it work when you're a Marxist Shiite? Don't they kind of have different, slightly different viewpoints to a god?
But they're blood brothers, Chuck. They really are kinsmen in a deep level. Marxism officially is atheistic. However, both Marxism and Shiite Islam want to establish an earthly paradise. They have a different idea of what it will be. The Marxists say it's the workers' paradise when the state withers away. You know, well, that's Leninism, but you get the idea that the true communism will dawn eventually on the earth if we just kill enough people to get there. And Islam is much the same way, that they want to establish the perfect society, which they think is the society of the law of Allah, Sharia, and they will cut your head off or cut off your hand or stone you to death, whatever, if you get out of line. And so both of them are authoritarian systems that are enforced by violence to establish an earthly paradise. And in both cases, they want to destroy their enemies. They don't want to have a dialogue or a discussion. They don't want to have an election, for that matter. They want to crush their opponents and allow only their point of view to be heard. And so all those things they have in common, they work together on their shared goal of destroying the United States and the West.
Well, what do you think, you know, he seems like an overwhelming favorite to win. Well, what do you think his first 100 days or 6 months will consist of?
I think he'll try to give out the free stuff that he's been promising, like the free buses, the low-cost grocery stores, the free housing, and so on. All of this he will attempt. Some of it he will succeed, and then it will fail. Like, for example, we had the low-cost grocery stores. They just closed, actually, a few months ago in Kansas City, and it was the same idea that they, instead of charging whatever the going rate is for groceries, they would charge cost, and the taxpayers would pay. You know, it's really just a trick. It's not free stuff.
No, yeah, you're paying one way or the other.
You pay on your tax form in increased taxes instead of paying at the grocery store. And so you're still paying for it. But the problem is when the government gets involved, then there's no incentive to be excellent because there's no competition. And competition is what drives excellence. The other guy is selling more, so you want to make your product better or cheaper or something to sell more, to outdo it. And so it's a striving for excellence. You remove competition, you have a government monopoly, like Mamdani is talking about for the buses and so on. It's just going to create inefficiency. This is why all the socialist regimes throughout history were always failures in economic basket cases, because you take away any reason to work. If I'm going to make the same amount of money, whether I work two jobs or whether I work really hard or start my own business and try to make a go of it, or if I just sit at my desk and pretend to work so that I don't get caught and reprimanded, well, then I'm not going to work.
Human nature.
All the same either way, and the government's going to take all my money, as Mamdani is already talking about. He's talking about a 52% tax rate for New York, and that's just the city taxes. Then on top of that, you got the state taxes, which are already high because it's New York, and the federal taxes. He's talking about taking basically all your money in taxes.
Well, I imagine anyone who has any money is going to leave, right? And so then what happens is you have all the... Let me ask you...
Do you think Kathy, you know, New York City is constrained by the fact that it can't increase taxes unless approved by the state. Is Kathy Hochul going to allow him to have a little free reign, a little fun?
She's probably going to push back as much as she can, but she just endorsed him. She already has attacked a lot of his policies, and it looked like she might not endorse him, but she caved to the Democratic Party leadership that wants this guy. And so she will probably try to rein him in, and she will probably fail because he does have the big party money and the party leadership behind him.
Well, and one of the things you mentioned in your book, as I understand it, is too that this is a leftist strategy. So all the, and so I want you to talk about that, because all the people who think, oh, he's just saying this to get elected, he doesn't really mean it. Like you said, she thinks, oh, I can restrain him. That's not true, right? That's like magical thinking, like a unicorn's going to come in and save him or something.
Well, it's very similar. Everybody thought that Hitler would be constrained. Oh, no, once he gets into government, he'll have to accede to the practicalities of government. And his more extreme policies will not be forthcoming. That didn't turn out too well.
And people have always thought that about far-left regimes, that once they get in power, they'll moderate and it will end up okay. And actually, they end up worse than what it looked like before they got in. And this guy, you're right, it's not like he's going to be the head of the Soviet Union, much as he might like to be. In other words, he can't stop people from leaving New York. The secret of the success, insofar as they had any success, of far-left regimes was that they made it impossible for people to leave the country. And so they could soak you, and if you wouldn't be soaked, they throw you in the gulag or they kill you. But you can't leave. Whereas in New York, people will be able to leave. And so he's just going to end up driving all the producers, all the productive people, out of the city and bankrupting it. And then he will ask Trump for a bailout. Trump will refuse, and then it will become Trump's fault that New York City.
That's true.
You know, here in Colorado, you know, this is about New York, but you know, Denver has adopted a lot of massive density. It doesn't like single-family homes anymore. It doesn't like nuclear families. Doesn't like cars. But then they went, wait a minute, they could go to the suburbs. So the state legislature is now mandating. That, you know, misery loves company, mandating the suburbs all adopt the same policy under the rubrics of affordability and climate change.
They'll force it on all of us if they can.
Yeah. Do you think one of the things that we've talked with other people about on the show is, on one hand, you kind of think, okay, well, go ahead, New York, elect this guy, and then you'll see how awful it is and no one else will elect him. But I worry that that's not true. I mean, we've got people who run as communists. In Denver, right? We've got a legislator who's a pro-Antifa person who's a communist state representative. And like I said, or like you said, I think this is a strategy that some very high up rich people on the left side, they are pushing this. And why? I mean, are they crazy or is it part of just destroying America?
Well, they really do want to destroy America. Okay. And we have to bear that in mind. It might seem inconceivable, but it's true because they are Marxists. They do want a communist system. And a communist system is internationalist and socialist and ruled by a reign of terror. And the way that you impose it is first you destroy the existing system. And then you exploit the chaos and say, we will bring order, and you bring authoritarian communism. This is the overall game plan, and this is what they want to do. People are talking about Mamdani, and saying he's going to destroy New York. If they're not careful, they're going to elect this guy who's going to destroy New York. Well, that's true, but it's not like it's going to be an accident. It's not like it's an unintended byproduct of his socialist policies. That's what he wants to do. He's getting elected in order to destroy New York because the people giving him money want it destroyed so they can exploit the chaos to impose their authoritarian rule.
Well, and we've seen this in Colorado, which a lot of times is a sort of like a blueprint and sort of like a petri dish. And then it works. And so my guess would be they're going to take what they, like you said, these people who are pushing this, right? The behind the scenes people, they're going to take what worked in New York and they're going to send it to Colorado. They're going to send it to Oregon. I mean, that would be my concern. Do you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, see, this is the thing when people say, oh, I hate New York. I don't care what happens to New York. I don't live there. Let them elect their crazy mayor. Okay, sure. Except New York is still part of the United States. And what happens there affects the rest of the country. In the first place, in an imitative way, like you're talking about, that other candidates like Mamdani, actually he is, as I show in the book, he is one of many. And they're going to keep turning out more of them, and they're going to keep on getting elected, and they're going to cause havoc around the country. And if he can succeed in New York, the rest of the country will be a lot easier to force into line. And also the things that he does as mayor of New York, can have and likely will have devastating effects on the rest of the country. I mean, what if, for example, a few years back, there was an assassination squad came from the Islamic Republic of Iran to kill Masih Ali-Nejad, who is a very courageous Iranian dissident in New York. And they were caught. But what if Mamdani had been mayor? Maybe he just doesn't happen to notice.
Right. Or they get released on a no PR bond or something.
There you go.
Well, you know, I'm from New York City, and New York has kind of gone through waves. I started out Dutch. The Dutch were there. Then the English came, which is really what my ancestors were in the 19th century. And then the Irish came, and they took it from the WAS. And then the Jewish settlers came in, and they took it from both of those groups. And now it appears to be Islam pouring into the city. Although, you know, a huge detriment is Trump, I would assume. He's taken the refugee quota status of close to 800,000 and cut it down to 7,500. It'll be mostly from Afrikaners. That must be a real cutoff of trying to transform New York City into an Islamic republic.
Well, there's no doubt about that. That's one of the reasons why Mamdani has made it clear that he's going to be there to resist Trump. Yeah. When they asked him, what do you want to do as mayor? He starts talking about immigration and Trump. He didn't talk about improving the lives of New Yorkers or whatever campaign rhetoric. He's all about stopping Trump's immigration policies because the Democrats know that's their base.
Right. What about the Democrat Party in general? I mean, you see this. It's that there's got to be a certain portion of the Democrat Party. Well, our friend Ted Trimpa, right? You know, the Democrat Party that's like, hey, wait a minute. No, we don't think this is, we don't want to go that way. We don't want to become Marxists. But they do not seem to have any influence. I mean, that side of the party Kamala Harris is talking about running again. I mean, that side of the party seems to be in complete, I don't know, disarray or...
Well, Cuomo seems to represent it. I mean, you see the smiling, happy, young face of Mamdani compared to the corrupt, foul thing of Cuomo. It's almost hard to kind of, well, what about the young guy? You know, give him a shot. I mean, why not?
Well, that is a big part of his appeal, that Cuomo is such an establishment guy and he's so corrupt. He's so unappealing in so many ways. And here's Mamdani, looks like a fresh face, somebody who's going to bring some real energy to New York. And he's young and he's attractive and he's everything else. But the problem is Cuomo's all they got at this point, standing between them and more suffering than they have likely anticipated.
Well, how'd you like his story about his aunt on the subways? And he brought him to tears. Literally, he could choke back the tears about talking about how his aunt had to undergo the horror of dirty looks on the subway. But even that was apparently wasn't true.
Not only is it not true, but it's a lie he's been telling for years. He just said it and he got caught this time. But I've actually got it in the book that one of his raps when he was a rapper in 2017 was all about how his aunt tried to go on the subway and was harassed for wearing hijab and was afraid to go out. It was a total lie then. It's a total lie now. Now he's been caught.
But I thought I was pretty good going, you know, like all of us, we call, you know, cousins. And so I've got a first cousin, one that I call an uncle. And that's not really an uncle.
And then their dad.
Even more, they went back. They found one that was, you know, dead, because the person has to be dead because you could check up with them. Dead several years and maybe wore a hijab. You can't talk to her, so it's all set. There's no problem, and it's just Islamophobia.
You notice her last name is Aunt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's what
the word means. The name that he gave of his supposed cousin who's dead, who this happened to, the name he gave in Urdu means whatever the first name was, an aunt.
There we go. Well, and talk a little bit then too about his the religion the basis, because again, I think a lot of people go, okay, that's just rhetoric. Nobody really means it. And we've talked about this many times before. It's like, when do you think the United States is going to wake up? And as you said, when they're chanting "Death to America," that's not like a slogan or something like that. You know what I mean?
Beautiful.
Well, yeah, I mean that's a philosophy, and that's a goal.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And Khamenei is the supreme leader in Iran. It's not like he's just some guy on the street corner. He says that this is not a slogan, it's a policy. We should take that seriously. When Mamdani says that he is Ithna Sheri, that is, he's a 12er Shiite, we should take that seriously and consider its implications for American national security. We don't have any assurance that he would work energetically to keep terrorists out of New York, to identify terrorists who were already in New York, to stop terrorists from attacking in New York or letting them come in via New York and go attack elsewhere. Nobody ever dares ask him about these things. But if he takes his religion seriously in regard to its waging of war against unbelievers, and he takes particularly his 12er Shiite religion seriously, which particularly targets America and Israel, and they chant "Death to America" and "Death to Israel," and they identify America with the Great Satan, which is this big rock in Mecca that you throw rocks at when you go make the pilgrimage to Mecca. There's this big stone in Mecca called the Great Satan, and next to it is a smaller one called the Little Satan. And part of the ritual when you make the pilgrimage to Mecca is you throw rocks at both of them, and say these prayers about renouncing Satan. So the Islamic Republic of Iran identifies the Great Satan with America and the Little Satan with Israel, which is a very big thing. People should understand this means that they're saying that they are the worst enemies of the Muslims.
Yeah.
And the first target of the Muslims. And a guy who believes that is going to be mayor of New York. That could have very serious consequences.
Yeah.
Well, I read somewhere that they expect Mamdani to get a certain percentage of Jewish voters.
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know how reliable the polls are, because I'm told that the Orthodox Jews in New York don't answer the pollsters, and they are certain not to vote for Mamdani, so probably he's going to get less of the Jewish vote than is being reported, but still substantial, because unfortunately there are many Jews for whom leftism is their real religion, not Judaism, and so they love this guy, and they got no problem voting for him.
You know, it's almost as if this guy was like, okay, I'm like a spy, and my job is, I've been hired by a bunch of these rich leftist people. My job is to destroy America, and now I'm running for mayor, so vote for me. And everyone says, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, that's like,
give us a nice smile. All right. Love that smile. Good teeth.
It could be
practically that bad, because he said the goal is to seize the means of production. He said these Marxist things that if anybody understands what they mean, they should say this guy should not be running for anything in America today. He's going to destroy the United States as a free republic if he gets half a chance. But people don't understand what that means, and they don't care because they are used to politicians saying all sorts of things, and then nothing much happens. They don't realize this guy, it's like Hitler versus all the other German politicians. This guy's different. He's going to cause a lot of trouble. But just as with Hitler, there were people in those days saying, well, you know, when he gets in power, he'll moderate, like you were saying, Chuck. And it's the same thing here. He's the same kind of fanatical ideologue. I have in the book, before he became a candidate himself, his first forays into politics were to work for some other campaigns. And one of the people that he worked for says, the guy's a real true believer. He really believes in socialism. He's not just saying these things because they're fashionable today. And so we have every reason to expect he's going to be inflicting the worst on New York if he gets the chance.
And going back to where you talked about the creation and the selling, it is the people. It's not like he's just this lone figure and he gets up there and all of his support drops away, right? He's being propped up and created and sold by all these other people who are also true believers. So even if he gets in there and says, oh, hey, you know, look, I don't really like this, I don't think they're going to let him, right? I mean, these people aren't, they really aren't kidding.
Yeah, he's an employee. He's bought and paid for. Soros gives them money. The Open Society Foundation, which is a Soros organization, the Council on American Islamic Relations gives them money. These groups, when they give you money, they expect you to toe their line.
And, of course, Soros is Jewish. So it's an interesting...
Well, he's Jewish, but he worked for the Nazis during World War
II. Well, yeah, Jewish Nazi, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Robert, where can... I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, we'll have to have you back.
After he's been there a little bit. See how he's doing.
What if he has first 100 days or kind of, you know, Trump was pretty efficient his first 100 days. And you got to imagine maybe this guy's got a plan, too.
Yeah, to hit the...
I wouldn't be surprised at all. The only thing against that is that he is 34. He has no experience, not just no experience in an administrative role, but no experience. I mean, the guy's never actually held a real job.
He was kind of a rapper for a little while, I guess.
He was a rapper. He worked on some campaigns. He worked for some far left activist groups, but he never had a real job.
And did Obama really ever have a real job? I mean,
And people were running him as well. And so it's likely to be that there are people be running this guy and they will hit the ground running on this agenda. We can just hope maybe that it'll be a little bit chaotic at the beginning in a good way. That is, maybe he'll think, oh no, I got elected. What do I do now?
What do I do now? All those people there. Hey, well, it's been wonderful as always. Where can people get your book?
It's at Amazon. It's wherever fine books are sold. If you see a bookstore, I know they're not very many, and it says we only sell lousy books, then don't go in because they won't have to. But where fine books are sold, that's where you'll find
them. All right, Robert.
Great to see you and talk to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. This book sounds great. We'll have you back after he's elected. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, Robert Spencer there. His book, Intifada on the Hudson, The Selling of Zohran Mamdani. You know, I think, and we've talked to other guests too, who have said, hey, do not underestimate how significant and how dangerous this could be.
But, you know, like something, like many socialist things seem like a good idea at first because it's free. But it doesn't seem Mamdani is going to get to do too many of those because he doesn't have any real money. And it seems like this might be a disaster from the beginning, but you never know. Even if it was, you think they're going to report in the New York Times that, hey, everything's really screwed up here.
Well, there's that. But also what worries me, though, is the fact, again, that he didn't just like spring out of nowhere, right? Yeah. That he's been, as Robert's book outlines, he's been created, he's been sold, and that he's been marketed by somebody. Like he said, he's an employee, right? And as an employee, those people might have their act together. I mean, you know, kind of like Joe Biden, you want a guy in there who's, you know, is a nice face and he doesn't seem to be, you know, very pushy, so you can do everything that you want. And Jacob says Mamdani was on the New York City Council.
No, he's an assemblyman. He's an assemblyman from New York.
What's the difference?
He's a state legislator. He wasn't a councilman in New York. He's an assemblyman from New York.
Okay, so just sort of like a state representative here. Okay, Jacob, so sorry. Jacob, you know everything, Jacob, so you don't have to apologize for something like that. We're waiting to get, coming up here, Cody LeBlanc on. To talk about give us kind of an update in the ongoing lawfare being waged
He's a pro se plaintiff against the Republican Party of Britta Horn, trying to say, wait a minute, everybody approved the opt-out, they approved firing your evil attorney, and you didn't do any of them. Maybe the court can prove
these things. And as we've talked about before, the courts, so there's been 54, actually now it's up to 54 and
5,000.
Yeah, no, like roughly 80 people who have been allowed to join. And I just got a letter from the court 2 days ago.
Welcome, Julie.
Well, I mean, I already was a plaintiff, but they added 17 new people. And this was after sort of they had a hearing. And this is after the hearing where the judge said, hey, he wants to look at stuff and review stuff. Once again, I take that if you're the judge and you're already pretty sure you're going to dismiss that Cody's complaint and Cody's points, then you're not going to bother to be sending out, you know, signing orders and issuing orders and listing people alphabetically.
That's a bit of an assumption.
Well, it is, but yes, he might be, but at least he's
trying. He might say, fine, they want a part of it. Great, you lose.
Right. Well, yes, he could indeed say that. But at least if I'm Klenda, I would rather have him, if I wanted to pick, which do I want the judge, right? I'd rather have, if you're Klenda, who's Prudhoe Horn's personal and the state party attorney, if you're Klenda, what you really want is for the judge to throw the whole thing out.
The blind, crazy judge.
Right, who just is like, oh, I don't want to deal with anything there. So that's all good news. But, you know, maybe while we're waiting for, well, it's a minute early, so. But while we're waiting, another thing we should talk about, too, is in this. This is kind of unrelated, but in the meantime, Prudhoe Horn is continuing completely unnecessary lawfare against grassroots Republicans and continuing her push to get attorney's fees from Matt Arnold, who had filed some of these lawsuits when they were trying to do the coup, and people like Cody,
I love about Prudhoe's first thing was unity. Everything is unity. And she's and there's been a group of grassroots who reached out to her and said, look, you know, let's sit down.
We'll talk with
you. Try to figure out what if we have some things in common. She goes, no, you're kind of like very strange. Did you get that from Mandami? I mean, we're
and we have Cody with us. Hey, Cody, go.
The best pro se litigant in Colorado history.
Hey, thank you for your time. So, I was saying just before you came on that I got a letter from the court. The judge issued an order admitting still more plaintiffs to the case, which I think, you know, is
it's all of you to pay attorney's fees.
Yeah, which is certainly encouraging. But what do you make of that? And what's kind of bring us up to speed on the latest? Because this is kind of fast moving.
Yeah, so I just got it in my mailbox yesterday or Monday, but that was the last set of 19, I believe, that were submitted the week before. So we're up to 75 plus myself, so 76 co-plaintiffs on this case.
All right.
Which is fantastic. And Julie, you're one of them.
So. I am one of them. So we'll be there. Well, and we wanted to go back, and because we pulled some stuff, and we wanted to go back and sort of, again, to kind of explain to people, you know, we're not making this stuff up. So at the state central committee meeting, we voted to certify the opt-out, number one. That's a big part of what your lawsuit is. And also the SEC clearly voted to fire Steve Klenda.
And then this is, you have to understand, most of the time, most pro se plaintiffs, defendants, everything else are scattered. They have no idea what they're doing. And so it was obvious that Klenda said, I'll just crush him right now. I said, okay, I'll get the draft, the minutes are not the draft. I'll call them the real minutes and I'll do declarations. All of it false, just blatantly false. And then you come back and go, false. He's going, oh, no, wait.
Let me read Britta's initial. Yeah. What we're going to do is I'm going to read her initial, what she initially presented to the judge as the
truth.
We will then play the audio and then of what actually happened. And then we'll play what she said afterwards. So initially she said, she's talking about, you know, the motion proceeded to a voice vote, which I believe failed. However, contemporaneous activity by the venue to force us to leave, which she initiated, combined with the continued indecorous behavior, did not allow my motion on this decision to be heard. So then they admitted the fake minutes, which said the chair called for a voice vote, which was taken. The chair believes she ruled that the no votes prevailed. Well, that's not true. And that shows. So we're going to play Cody, and we'll get you to comment on this. Yep. Doug, if we could please play the Britta soundbite. This is what actually happened at the meeting.
At this indecorous meeting.
So if we could have the Britta, here we go.
On for the vote of this question, yes or no? Shall Prudhoe Horn's personal defense attorney be dismissed as the CRC attorney because he's attempting to unethically represent both the plaintiff, CRC, and the defendant, Prudhoe Horn, and the CRC's litigation instead of allowing CRC's legal affairs committee to choose an unbiased next general counsel for CRC? And it'll be a voice vote. So all those in favor?
Yes!
You can hear it, number one, the you know, fire him wins. She clearly says it passes. So after you submit this to the judge, Britta comes back and says, okay, this is my...
I knew you had a video there.
Second amended thing. And she said, basically what she says is...
No, say it. Say it exactly.
I stated it at the resolution to Klenda This is what you claim, that it passes. Well, I reviewed the video, which does show this. But she says that they taken this as an aside. It was not a ruling that I meant to make. When I submitted my initial declaration, I did not recall and still do not specifically saying it passes, because I don't think that it passed. I mean, it passed.
I'd still, okay, that's on the tape, but AI, we all know about AI now.
She doesn't even claim that.
I know she doesn't claim that. But I mean,
it's crazy that she's claiming that. And to your comment of we submitted the video, it wasn't even just one video. There were two separate video recordings. I'm not going to say exactly because
but
it wasn't.
She knew. But she knew. I mean, this was not secret, right? This was
no. And I mean, we were all shocked that she allowed the recording and the live streaming of the meeting to happen. That shocked us walking in there, and now it's coming back to bite her. So I'll be surprised if she ever allows that to happen again. But luckily we had Weston Eimer, who's also a plaintiff on this case. And then James Peabody from Jefferson County that both recorded it. And so they submitted affidavits that said, no, you can clearly see this is what happened. And so her amended statement to the court, her amended affidavit, keeping in mind she had the CRC's attorney who was fired submit this affidavit while she never actually entered an appearance on the case and never had an attorney represent her. So that's all a little out there too. But circling back, her amended affidavit says basically what you said. Well, I may have said that it passed, but I think I was asking a question, but I don't really recall. And I also knew that this video existed when I submitted my original affidavit, but I never went back to actually pay attention to what I said. And so, we should just forget about all of it. I lied to the court, but it's okay because I didn't know I was lying to the court, even though I did know I was lying to the court.
Right, exactly. So hopefully, and now you haven't, I take the judge had indicated that he wanted to rule on all of this, hopefully within a couple of weeks, certainly by Thanksgiving. So
No. For this part,
it was
within 2 weeks, one of which has gone by. So I don't know. Do we expect a ruling sometime this week?
So I think what we'll expect a ruling on before anything is the disqualification of Clenda as the attorney for the state party.
Yeah.
And so I think that we should expect to hear something within the next week or so. Yeah. I'm not holding my breath, just knowing how quickly the court moves. And
right.
I did file a reply to that updated affidavit. And so even though the judge did ask us to be a little bit more conservative in the amount of filings that we submit, there were a few things that I didn't get to cover during the status conference that I wanted to make sure were covered. And because Clenda raised some new arguments in that, because at that point, up until that amended affidavit and that motion, there was never an argument that the CRC didn't have the authority to fire him.
Yeah.
In the amended one, that's where he raised.
He has her raise it in her declaration.
Right.
He's making that an argument. This is my declaration about what happened at the meeting. Oh, yeah, now I remember. And then he went into this huge legal argument. They had no authority to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an amazing. And the best part about it, the one that freaks me out, and I'm not sure why I'm so particularly hung up on it, but by and large, you get your motion, you get your response, and then you get your reply. After that, you just can't keep on filing things. You have to ask the court permission. I'd like to file an amended addendum as additional facts have come up that are important to review and supplement my prior declaration. No, he just filed it. Oh, screw that. Hey, by the way, what about this? Yeah, what about that? Yeah.
And so that's where I said, in the past, during this case, I'm not an attorney, but I can use Google. I can read. I at least have the power of critical thinking, which I'm not so certain about the current state party chairman. Yeah. But when I had to file a surreply, I filed a motion asking the court's permission to file that surreply. And so then seeing this come through, so when I filed this response to a reply to a secondary reply. I mean, it was just a nightmare. So, I mean, I'm really hoping the judge just dismisses all of that because it was done out of order. But I'm sitting here going, why is this man who no longer represents the party by the vote of the CRC continuing to operate and do these things, but is now doing it in a way that is not following proper procedure?
Right.
And I mean, it makes you really question what is happening at the CRC. I'm not a member of the Central Committee anymore, so I can say it in a way that doesn't include me.
Well,
but I also know in the CRC's body.
They can't. And like, first, we need to point out that Klenda, who has already bankrupted the party with this is motions and motions and motions ago. God knows what he's been charging the party for all of these ongoing motions.
I told you he had a light, bright $30,000 one for them to suck on a few days ago. Here, take this.
I mean, it's ridiculous. But in the meantime, the state central committee members we had filed the petition. We got enough people filed the petition to ask Britta to hold a special meeting saying, hey, let's just quit spending money until we can get things in disarray. We also want to talk about this whole Klenda issue. And by the way, we want to have a vote of no confidence. And so what she had her secretary, Russ Andrews, to say, oh, you submitted it on an old form.
We got a new one.
I just invented a new form, but it hadn't shown
anything
yet.
Very easy for you all to comply with. And just put down your birth certificate, answer citizenship test, and a few other things.
So then people are now, they're having to verify that they signed it. And Russ Andrews is now sending out snarky emails telling people, quit sending me your emails saying that you signed it. It's like, well, you created it. I mean, there is so much going on here. I mean, Britta is clearly, and you got to wonder what the frick is really going on. It's like, why not just get rid of Klenda, bring in another attorney?
Which is normally, and it's just your buddy down the hall, right? Hey, you just make an appearance here and you know, we don't have to worry about it.
A special meeting. I mean, what do you think is underlying the, because I got to hope that the judge is maybe thinking about that, at least going on here.
Well, you know, so the one piece I wanted to point out, and we talked about it the last time I was on, the judge we have for this is also the same judge that heard Williams v. Watkins last year and already ruled on some party matters. And his ruling was correct with incorrect facts in that case, that the will of the body is the final say. And so we did cite that ruling back to the judge in one of his in one of our other motions or replies. So I hope that the judge is paying attention and sees what's going on. Where Klenda's at and where Russ Andrews and Britta, all of them, I was having the conversation with some friends earlier today. I want to know who's pulling the strings. We know that Britta reads off of a script, and if it's not off the script, she doesn't know what to say. I want to know who writes that script for her. I really do. And so then you see how Russ acts with the call for the special meeting. You see what Holtorf does during the meeting, acting as her enforcer. Then they bring up Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams to act.
Yeah, all right, Stevie boy.
Like, I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of stunts that they're willing to pull. And the comment I wanted to add just to the clip of the actual vote that day, it may sound in certain parts like the no's had a louder voice. You can hear Chuck's voice loudly say yes in that vote. But what you're hearing the no's is because the cameras were set up right in front of Weld County, where I live, right in front of Rhino Lake.
Right.
And so you had every last one of the Weld County elected officials and our bonus members standing there screaming no. They didn't have the majority. They knew they didn't have the majority.
Well, and at the very least, what has to happen is you can't have a tie voice vote. If the voice vote and then people in there, you know, enough of them disagree that the voice vote was center, what you have to then do, and she did this on other occasions during the meeting, is then you have a standing count, right? And so, which she then let Steve Reams kick, she go, oh, I have to close the meeting now.
Steve just stomped on the all day.
So the solution is not for her to just make it up and file an affidavit.
I would have said,
the solution would be, we didn't actually, the best case she can have is we didn't settle it. And so we needed to have another vote. And now, rather than just asserting that it failed,
she would have.
There's no procedure. And you got to ask yourself, why? What is it that they're, why is she so determined to keep Steve Klenda on as her attorney when there's plenty of other attorneys out there?
Well, so I want to just draw our attention back to her time as the treasurer, the county treasurer for Rout County. I mean, during her time there, I'm not familiar with all of the details, but there's plenty of articles out there that all you have to do is read them. Her budget for outside attorneys was $5,000 as the county treasurer. They had in-house counsel. Apparently, there was an issue between her and the commissioners, though, that led to legal battles. So she hired Klenda in that case when he was with Klenda, Gessler, and Blue, I think. And so when he was there, they ran up $100,000. Sound familiar? $100,000 in legal fees, even though the county commissioners kept asking her, are you going to stay within your $5,000? Are you going to stay within your $5,000? And she kept saying yes, responding in writing, yes. So not only the commissioners, but the county manager. I mean, it's ridiculous. Run up a bill of $100,000 to them, and then it was on the taxpayers of Rout County to have to pay off her legal fees to Klenda. So this isn't the first time that she's used Klenda, and just, right. I mean, she's bankrolling something there, the rate it looks like.
Yes. All of this going on, when we do have an election next week, right?
Really?
Rather than actually, I mean, helping Republicans get elected, right? And rather than helping train people and do all of that kind of stuff, is so busy filing lawsuits that we can't afford as a party.
Where's the leadership, though, even to the county parties in that? I mean, at the very least, if the state party wants to spend all their time fighting me in court, great, go for it. But at least offer some leadership to your county parties. How many counties are actually endorsing school board candidates and town council members?
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
you can't see where I'm at right now because I've got it blurred, but I'm sitting at the Boulder County Republicans office where there's actually conservatives in Colorado. And Peg is a fantastic county chairman, and her board is endorsed and is supporting candidates for Longmont City Council, Boulder Valley Schools, St. Vrain Valley Schools. That is what leadership looks like. Right. And even if your chair is derelict in her duties, there are plenty of other people. And what's this Alec Hanna or whatever his name is, their executive director, what's he doing during all of this time?
Right. But not getting paid, maybe. I mean, so maybe. No, but you're absolutely right, particularly. And you make a good point.
Well, one county chair called him up that I was talking to yesterday, and he said that he just hung up on him. He said, well, wait a minute. What really happened at the state center? Click.
I mean, you know, that was their complaint about Dave and Anna and Hope, was that none of them would return a phone call or would do this, that, or the other. And I mean, am I going to sit here and tell you that Dave returned every phone call or Hope returned every phone call? I think they did by and large. But if you spent your whole time on the phone screaming at them, it's no wonder they don't want to answer the call next time you call them.
Right.
And so I can give them a little grace for that. But if you're calling to ask a question and wanting some leadership from your state GOP, that's their job, is to get Republicans elected at all levels of government. And the way you do that is through your county party apparatus. And how do you do that when you're hanging up on a county chair or providing zero leadership to them? And where is their office? That's the question everybody wants to
know. We don't have one anymore.
The magical office.
I thought that was one of Britta's promises, that she'd have offices all over
the state. Well, you know, Cody, you kind of hit it on the head. And I think this is, and I keep kind of harping on this because I want people to understand it. The people who are pulling Britta's strings want to destroy the Colorado Republican Party. They don't want effective leadership at the county chair level. They want primaries where a bunch of billionaires with dark money donations and the Americans for Prosperity pick their candidates. They push those candidates, and that's all we know to vote for. I mean, I think that's the ultimate goal. And that.
Well, I'd like to do a little pushback.
Okay.
As a practical matter, here's the real truth. There's nobody pulling any strings.
Well, not anymore.
I mean, if somebody was pulling strings, you'd see some intelligent things being done. There are none. It's just them. There is nobody back there.
They're just Britta.
There's just crazy Britta, and her 12-year-old executive. I mean, it's nobody.
So I do think that there was a puppet master at the beginning. Yeah. I won't go into my conspiracies on who that person might be. But as we saw this governor's race expand, I mean, we all know that the establishment candidate, the Americans for Prosperity or Americans for Chinese Prosperity candidate, is Barb Kirkmeyer.
Oh, yeah. But
I mean, we know that. Then you see Victor Marx come on the scene, though, and now he's got the support of Heidi Genall, and he's got the support of these other major rhinos, but also some conservatives. And that's separating the establishment, I think. So I think that's where you see this transition of you're losing that puppet master's ability. We also can't disregard the RNC's role here either. The RNC is no longer the America First Party. Since Laura Trump has stepped away from the RNC has reverted back much more to their big government swamp mentality. Mm-hmm. And we see that Alex Hanna, that's where he came from. He was gifted to us from the RNC. And so you see all of these things moving, and it's not just a Colorado thing. This is happening in every state where there is a powerful grassroots movement. Whether we have control of the party or not, we're powerful, and they know that. We may not have the votes to remove Britta, but darn sure if the election happened tomorrow, Britta wouldn't win a second term.
Right. Hey, and Koya, I hate to cut you off because you're so great, but we have to go now. Okay. Thank you for all that you're doing. Thank you for being the greatest lawyer in the history of the universe. real quick, I want you to tell where can people go, because this is not free. Where can people go to help you?
Yes. So there's a few options. Colorado Doge is something we set up with the first lawsuit. That's colodoge.com, colodoge.com. There's another group that we're not sure who they are. That's Colorado Doge Report. That is not us, so disregard that. But colodoge.com, or reach out to me, and I'm happy to give you an address that you can mail a check to, and give you insight on that side. I don't want it to be seen, though, that I'm a grifter and just trying to make money off of this, because that's not... We're putting our heart and soul and blood, sweat, and tears into this.
And even
$5 to cover the tolls to get down to the Centennial Courthouse when I need to file something is appreciated. just reach out to me. I've given my email many times. My phone number, though, 303-720-2350. Easy to remember. Feel free to call, text anytime. Happy to get back to you that way.
Cody, thank you for all you do.
Best of luck.
Thank you, Julie. Thanks, Chuck.
All right. We'll see you guys later. I'll see you later. Thank you. All right. That will wrap it up for us.
That's it for us.
Tuesday.
It's over.
We will see everybody on Monday. We've got a couple of guests. John Conlon has a great column out. And then somebody from Turning Point USA will be joining the show
on
Monday as well. So we'll see y'all then.
Take care.